Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Women Talking is over, but we're just getting started here on Post Show Recaps Theater. My name is Grace. We're here each day covering a different Best Picture nominee on the Daily Oscar Pod. I'm not alone. I'm here with my co-host Ariel. Ariel, how are you doing?
I'm good. I showed up. I didn't want to be the only man here, but you know, sometimes you got to be that person.
The opening line of Women Talking is over, I do feel like, could be taken out of context. I'm not sure I love it. That's okay. Of course,
it's done.
Yeah, we do our best to bring on some guests along the way, so we are not alone. Latonya Starks is here to chat about this movie. LT, how you doing?
I am hanging in there. Yeah. I am sad to hear that Women Talking is over because I'm just getting started.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. It's done. We got one movie and then that's it.
That's it. Yeah. That's all we got.
Mm-hmm. LT, Aaron and I have chatted about this movie. We did, folks can go back into the archives. We chatted with Chantel Francis about Women Talking when it came out in theaters and a wide release. But I'd be intrigued to hear your thoughts. Before we get started, just a reminder to folks, make sure you subscribe to pushrecaps.com/movies for our daily Oscars coverage as well as our regular movie coverage. But yeah, what'd you make of Women Talking, LT?
Love Chantel. Glad that she was on here to talk about this movie. So I didn't read the book. So from the outside in, I thought that this story was set in a community in like the 1800s or maybe the early 1900s. So hearing August speak about things like World War II, late, and then later seeing the census truck fully blasting Daydream Believer, and the person speaking over the air horn, it was so jarring and unexpected for me that I did not know fully what to do with myself. I love this movie. I think that it should be required viewing for everyone, frankly. The premise of it is just so shocking, but completely based in truth, which is probably more shocking, actually. And I think that it was interesting that, you know, the women voted for the first time between three choices: to do nothing, to stay and fight, or to leave. And the line, who sets us apart from those who get left behind, what sets us apart from those who get left behind, is really stunning for me. And especially given that it is said by a child, like that there are children involved in this situation, is one of the things that stands out the most to me.
Yeah, Aaron, I know people, you know, often talk about this movie being like a play, but it's very interesting in the way that like they kind of do some stuff in the movie that actually is kind of not impossible from the book perspective, but certainly the book chooses to tell you that this is based on real events and when they happen. So the sort of surprise reveal, and I watched the movie first, and then I went and read the book, and then I watched the movie again. I think it works exceptionally well as sort of to like shock your system that like, I think that there's something about this movie in a way that feels very timely in terms of like the type of stuff that is in movie. I talk about this, that there's a few movies in the Best Picture race that I think are timelier than others in terms of conversations we're having. I think like the whiplash of that moment when you start to realize like, oh, this is like so much sooner in time than we sort of thought. And we're closer to this being a thing that happens in society. The book was written pre Me Too movement, but sort of the movie comes out sort of post Me Too movement. And I really like that choice from the movie's perspective to sort of like, you know, it's a shock, but I don't think it's like, you know, shock in the way that's like wrong. I just think it's like, I think it's a really great choice to make you kind of think that this could be set whenever. It's timeless in a way. And then it like confronts you with the idea that like, this is like 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's wild to consider the implications of that. And like you said, and I fully agree, I was getting ready to say, it does feel super timeless at the end of the day. It feels like it could be the, you know, 1600s, frankly. Some of the stuff they're talking about, it's abhorrent, obviously, but the fact that it's that, you know, it has this play structure and it still works as a complete movie and a complete, like, you know, retextualization in some ways of our world and what we think we're going to get when we go into this and when it takes place and all that. It's wild. And, you know, I feel honestly genuinely lucky that I got to see this in theaters a second time, honestly.
Well, I think one of the things, you know, I said, like, it feels timeless, that it could be any time in the past. Then it confronts you with sort of this idea that, like, oh, it's happening so much closer than now. Then the other piece I really like this about this movie, and I think this movie is pretty like sad in a lot of, right? Like, the reality of what they're facing is a bunch of women who have been, and almost all the women at this colony have been sexually assaulted by men of the colony, who the men have all left to go bail them out. But the other piece of this movie that I really love is the title. One of the cards at the front of the movie says, "This is a work of female imagination." This is not exactly what happened, and not to discredit what the women who were involved in the situation, many of them did speak publicly at the trial of the men who were accused of doing this. And that's something that, like, would have been, in the same way that, like, they need to hide that they're doing this, that would have been a very, like, you know, thing that would have been looked down upon from the men of their, you know, and so, not to discredit what they're doing, but I do love this idea that, like, it's of the past, it feels like it's of the present. And there's also a way in which, like, it's depicting, like, what the future could be. I really love Rooney Mara in this, this movie, kind of notably. I think I'll see, like, none of the women get nominated for any acting roles. I don't know if they, like, split their votes, but the Rooney Mara stuff, I think, where she's talking about, like, okay, let's just pause and, like, what do we want our new society to be? And ultimately them choosing to leave at the end, I feel like, is such a, like, I don't know, there is this, like, you know, this hopefulness, I think, that's in the movie, that you get the past, present, and what the future could be.
Yeah, totally. That, and the fact that the narration is clearly coming from the future as well. And for Rooney Mara's character, there's just something that's about her character, that she's so light in the face of all of this. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. And I think that part of it for her motivation is that she's pregnant, and mm-hmm. she's thinking about what the world will be like for her child, or if she has a daughter especially, and what she wants a community that she lives in to look like. She still wants to have all of the kind of, I guess, trappings of this, like, very, like, Christian Mennonite community, but just someplace where they're free of violence, which doesn't seem like a lot to ask, especially in the 2000s.
There's some other very interesting, like, changes from the book to the movie, which we've talked about on the previous episode. But I think one of them is the narration. The narration is done by Ben Whishaw's character August in the book. And that's entirely, like, a mechanism in terms of, this is how you're reading it. He's the one who takes the minutes. And so initially they had done some screen tests with him doing all the narration and decided it didn't really work. And so they switched it, and they actually played around with a bunch of different people who would be doing the narration. I think they landed sort of perfectly on Nietzsche speaking to Ona's, like, child who's born at the end of the movie. That was really perfect. The other change that happens as well is there's rumors of a fire out in the where they need to head, which is north. And as they walk off in the book, there's sort of, like, fire. And actually, they did an edit of this film where, when you pan up as they're leaving, they are the fire element is a piece that's in there, and they're sort of going into, like, dangerous and unknown. And I love the removal of that. I think, like, there's a way in which, like, in the book, it's like there's a little bit more, like, I don't want to say groundedness or realness, but this idea of, like, and I don't mind that idea of, like, okay, the outs, you know, whatever we're going up with, you know, out there is dangerous, and I get why it's in there. But I do think, like, there's enough of that, of, like, how dangerous it will be. Like, we don't have a map. We don't know what we're, you know, all of this stuff, that, like, I think that not having the fire at the end of the movie and just having it sort of be like, okay, let's go, and whatever, it already has that sense of, like, that could be bad or it could be great, what they're going to build, that I don't think that those are necessary. So just some interesting changes, I think, from the book to the movie that I think work really well for, like, a screen adaptation, Ariel.
Yeah, I listening to that about the fire, I was like, I would have been so confused. Like, well, why it was like, obviously in a book you have a lot more leeway and ability to set a tone, you know, use language to kind of establish the meaning behind something, even if you don't explain it all the way. And the movie, to your point, it's clean in the way that, well, it is very messy in a lot of ways that are emotionally messy and still work, but I think the cleanliness with which they make their choice ultimately, or they act on their choice, maybe not make the choice, but once they decide what they're going to do, then they act on it, works really well.
We'll chat about the end. We'll do sort of if it won, but I'm interested, LT. This movie definitely feels like it was on the bubble. I think it was a little bit of a surprise that it got nominated. Mm-hmm. I think we're covering the Best Picture nom, so these are good opportunities for us to talk about other things. I feel like Sarah Pauli definitely, you know, in terms of there being no women nominated in Best Director, I feel like she was one of the people who was sort of like in contention and ends up on the outside. Mm-hmm. I think very interesting that, like, I'm so happy that this movie got nominated, because I really thought that, like, you know, and there are definitely things that I think got snubbed, and unfortunately I think they're sort of competing with sort of like In This Women Talking Space, I think All Quiet as well, in terms of a movie I know you were hyping up and just telling people go watch The Woman King. It's on Netflix, go watch it, it's amazing. Definitely a movie that I don't know. Apparently, like, Sony has been, like, historically who made Woman King has historically been, like, pretty bad at, like, they don't get a lot of traction with Oscar stuff. And so there's some weird, like, politicking stuff there. But yeah, at least, you know, I'm quite happy to see that Women Talking sneaks its way into the Best Picture race.
Yeah. Two movies for me that didn't make it in, one being The Woman King and then the other being She Said, were movies that I was like, oh, well, these obviously are going to get nominated for Best Picture. Like, they might not get any acting noms, but they will get nominated for Best Picture. And then obviously they did not. Mm-hmm. So I was pleasantly surprised to see that Women Talking did get a nomination, even though Sarah Pauli definitely deserves a directing nomination, just for assembling this cast of people. Honestly.
Yeah. Well, what about this too? That they, like, they don't, not a single one of them. Even they don't even get Frances McDormand get nominated for best name in a movie in 2022 for Scarface Jans. Scarface
Jans, as I have been saying it. Scarface Jans. Yeah. great. Best name used for sure. I can easily say this. Best name of a character in a movie that is never named.
I think one of the things about this that I feel like if people walk away from Women Talking feeling a little bit like where it might is the play aspect, that I feel like it's very talky, and that's a thing that I really love from the movie. I feel like how the movie, I think, asks sort of almost like unanswerable questions, or questions that have you know, very different answers depending on which character is going to respond. I think in terms of these, like, three families that are in the, is it two or is it three? I can't remember.
Three.
Is sort of between Jesse Buckley's character and Claire Foy's character and Rooney Mara's character. Like, they all have sort of these, like, different views on life for a variety of different reasons. And so asking these really big questions, like there's a monologue from Rooney Mara when she's talking about, she's like, why does the absence of love lead to violence? Like, why does that happen? You know, and like, that's like, what a gigantic question that's asking. I think for some people, it felt a little too, like, almost like Oscar-y in a way. Like, it's too, it's just like trying to, like, you know, almost like talk about things with that. I feel like, you know, in a way, like, not totally answering them, but I think that's like part of the reason is that, like, I think, like, they're almost unanswerable questions that they're asking. So I love it. And then the other piece is that I do feel like there's maybe not as much Ariel, I'm gonna throw you under the bus here a little bit, of like exposition in terms of like who is who. And like, I know because I've read the book and I've watched this movie three times, that like I can tell you like the but even then I'm like, is it two families or three families? Like, I'm like struggling to remember.
Sorry. That like I really can't tell some of them apart.
Well, yeah, you know, between Claire Foy and Jesse Buckley's, you know, which one is, you know, when you're watching it, it's which, but there, you know, there is a way. I mean, and then the other piece that is really is kind of like the movie has been criticized for is the color palette that they choose, which I think works from setting it in sort of like feeling old timey and then like sort of like confronting you with it being actually something very modern. But I'm wondering what you make of these like critiques, LaTanya, that like have been sort of thrown at the movie.
I mean, as far as it being too talky, it's literally called Women Talking. Like, Hollywood, get on board. I don't know what else you want. Like, I feel like every movie that gets nominated for Best Picture is very Oscar baity, right? And I don't think that this is intentionally Oscar baity in any way. It's just a collection of women who happen to be very good actresses, and they're talking about their collective future. And maybe that's what scares people, is the idea of having too many women in a space talking about what could be. But it's just ridiculous to me that some of these performances aren't nominated. And the color palette, I think, is excellent. I think it is, you know, designed to do exactly what it did to me for people who haven't read the book. And I don't really understand what people's objections to this movie would be other than that. I mean, I think that it's well written, the cast is superb, and yes, it asks some questions that are not answerable, but so does every good movie. I mean, that's what philosophy is. It's asking big questions that don't necessarily have answers, and then synthesizing it into movie form is what we do all the time with every Oscar nominated film. So the only like really big thing that I can see being an obstacle here is the fact that it is a cast of all women discussing sexual assault, which is something that Hollywood is currently and has been under fire for. And, you know, they're doing it in a way that centers women and does not care. Like, they literally at times tell the only man in the movie to shut up because he's not
mostly Jesse Buckley tells him to shut up.
It's true.
Yeah,
but still it happens.
Yeah.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
There are parts that feel almost like Sorkin-esque, just in the way that like some of the dialogue is like snapping back and forth in a way that for me is very effective. And when dialogue is this good, frankly, it makes me feel smart, and that's something that I don't feel a lot of the time. So I felt good watching some of the parts of this movie
good.
It
lizard brain.
It is nominated for adapted screenplay as well. Oh. It is up against All Quiet, A Glass Onion, Living, and Top Gun Maverick. Top Gun Maverick being, I always hate this, the adapted screenplay, because it's a sequel. It needs to be in the adapted screenplay.
Glass Onion? Really?
Glass Onion, also a sequel.
It's a similar rule, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, those nominated. I would love for Women Talking to win. I don't know which
it
of those
can.
Are going to win.
It will.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It should.
I also wanted that one. I think I would probably like the best for sure.
I also didn't want to fact check myself because I felt like I've seen this movie so many times. I needed to have it right. It is two families. The Friesens and the Lowens are the two families in the movie. So I wanted to make sure I wasn't losing my mind that it was like, is it a third family? It's only because Scarface Jan's character is like,
yeah,
yeah, but she's not invited into the loft. Yeah.
It helps that I mean, she's invited. She just doesn't want to come.
She leaves.
She up and jans herself. I think it might just be that I can't tell them apart, and that's why I thought it was three families.
No, it's Agatha played by Judith Ivy with her daughters Ona and Salome, who are Runimara and Claire Foy. They're their sisters, and then there's Loans, which is Greta and her daughters Mariche and Mayhall. Jessica Michelle McLeod, we haven't talked about at all. I really thought her performance was great. The one who's like secretly smoking the whole time. She's
the two daughters. Actually, that makes it easy to track because it's like the third generation, so to speak, of youngest women in the room are I could differentiate them a lot easier. Just
well, but then there is a younger generation than that, though. Then there's Mariche's daughter Oche, and then
that's what I'm saying.
Okay. And Nietzsche is not part of their family. It's just been basically being looked after, which is like way more explained in the book. Again, like I do feel like one of the things is not super clarifying some of this stuff in the movie. I think if there's like a thing that I like tick points off. But let's dive into our memorable moments. LT, we'll start with you. Which moment did you pick?
What if the men who are in prison are not guilty?
Mother.
Oh, child.
Why are you asking if
Jude, shush.
We caught one of them. I saw him.
But only one.
Yes, only one, but he named the others.
But what if he was lying? We must consider this.
No. No, that is not our responsibility because we aren't in charge of whether or not they are punished. We know that we've been attacked by men, not by ghosts or Satan, as we were led to believe for so long. We know that we've not imagined these attacks, that we were made unconscious with cow tranquilizer. We know that we are bruised and infected and pregnant and terrified and insane, and some of us are dead. We know that we must protect our children regardless of who is guilty.
All right, Salome, thank you. Please sit down.
So I picked a Claire Foy soliloquy and then a reveal. Really just Claire Foy in this movie for me is my most memorable moment. But the section where she says, we know that we are bruised and infected and pregnant and terrified and insane and some of us are dead. We know that we must protect our children regardless of who is guilty. And then we later learn that it's not just she who's been sexually assaulted, but it's also her very young daughter who's only 4 years old, which is
why she's going to get antibiotics. She's like carrying her daughter on her back to the medical clinic. And we see her daughter like come in into the loft a couple of times to come be with her mom. And that's when I think they also sing. They sing at one point to calm down. Her daughter. Yeah, there's a way in which all these people are literally all of them are dealing with trauma because they either have been most of them assaulted or, you know, it's a family member or, you know, a sibling, a daughter, whatever. And the way that like they're choosing to, as much as they like, you know, specifically Jesse Buckley's character, who is so like the most like pointed, I think, in the movie and rightfully so, the other women like push back at her a little bit. But the way that they like, they do come together because this thing is happening. And it's actually Claire Foy we see this scene a couple of times where she attacks the men in the when they've been locked up, which is why the men get moved into town and why the men are going to bail them out. But it's also her basically saying, like, if we stay, I will commit more violence. Yeah. Is ultimately the reason why they leave. Because they say, like, that's that would be such a sin. We need to remove ourselves from the situation as to not to make sure that like we don't commit violence against these other men, and they're going to choose to leave. So,
like her righteous indignation about the very real attacks against women and children is such a necessary response to sexual assault to show to people. And her anger in this movie is so palpable that this little soliloquy is just like really powerful and captures something as difficult and frightening as female rage, but in all in one little paragraph.
And
they're dealing with incredibly complex topics, as you already said, Grace, and you reminded me of like all those discussions about forgiveness and if forgiveness is forced or if it's like not completely 100% meant or honest or true, then is it true forgiveness and is it worth trying? And, you know, the idea of like, we need to leave so that we can't, so that we no longer commit violence and keep our souls pure is just so devastating and also kind of lovely and uplifting, I guess, to your point about how the movie ultimately ends.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I think I was most surprised about this movie when I went to go see it was like how much like I'm not a religious person and how much like I thought that like this was very effective conversation about like the complicated nature of being someone who is religious, believes in God, and this idea that like you should forgive people, but like what if in your heart you actually like can't forgive them? And at what point are you just like forgiving for the sake of being told you need to forgive rather than actually in your heart, like truly wanting to forgive someone? I thought that was like very compelling, like back and forth dialogue. But I mean, it's funny because like you come into this movie almost thinking like Jessie Buckley is like the angry character, and she is, but like her anger is born out of like having probably the most abusive husband of any of these people, at least like people that we quote unquote meet. We never really see Klaus. But really like Claire Foy has the anger that like feels the most like, not justified is the wrong word, but like we're completely on board with like, yeah, why she's like attacking these men, why she's like so ready to just leave. Because this is like, what an awful thing that happened. And when it's revealed that it's her like 4-year-old daughter who's been assaulted as well, you're like, yeah.
Salome?
We may need to protect ourselves.
Where is Aaron?
He's in the buggy waiting.
You convinced him to leave.
You may need this. For protection.
Did you have...
Yes. He's coming with me. He's my child. Bye, August. Good luck.
Please take care of Una and her baby.
Of course, I promise.
Wait, I need to give you some...
No, I have to go.
Here.
Why have you got a gun, August? Yourself, August. You have important work to do. You are the boy's teacher.
But let's chat about your scene between August and Salome.
Yes, so thank you for telling me which one it was. Salome. it's a scene. You know, the scene is so powerful, and again, you know, I love to choose another time that I chose like a fairly dramatic moment, but I can't hold in my tears when this happens. And when it's especially the first time you watch it, it just hits you like a gut punch when you understand what's actually happening, that August was so heartbroken about Una leaving, and also just everything that's happened and feeling lonely, that he would possibly take his own life is like an extra, is kind of an afterthought in light of every other monstrous thing that's happening, but it's no less affecting. And the way he just breaks down in the face of that truth that he is now being confronted in his reality and out loud by somebody else and not just in his head is incredible. It's easily my favorite Ben Whishaw performance I've ever encountered. I mean, you know, I love him from The Hour, which was a little show that no one watched. And this is incredible. This is incredible stuff for him. I hate to call it the only guy, but we have so many moments from Salome herself that are great, and she's incredible in this one too.
It was really interesting being at two Q&As with Sarah Polley. One was at TIFF when I saw the movie for the first time. The other one was with both Sarah Polley and Miriam Taves, who wrote the book, did a Q&A. And there, every time there would be so many questions about August. And you could just feel people like being like, I'm so sorry, but this is my question. I know it's about a man. And then like, it's fine. He's a character in the movie. Was really funny. But one of the things I love most about this scene is it's essentially a reveal of so there's this moment that I love when Ona is leaving and Greta follows out behind her and August calls out, says, I love you, Ona. And then Ona kind of waves goodbye. She doesn't say I love you back. And then Greta says, she loves you too, August. She loves everybody as they're going. And that seems like the fact that she doesn't sort of like reciprocate and he does like offer to be the father of this baby during the movie. And she politely turns him down saying like, you know, I wouldn't be me if I was with somebody. And but the idea of asking someone to write the minutes in the book, I believe the women actually he offers the minutes and the women actually do take them in the movie. He says, no, like you were supposed to keep the minutes. You keep them. Like this is for like the future generation. But essentially like Miriam Taves talks about how like writing the minutes is actually pretty pointless for a group of people who like it's saying for the men, which like, yes, maybe someone will be like, oh my God, look how, you know, look how like awful we've treated these women and have a change of heart. Maybe, but the women can't read. And so like keeping the minutes, taking the minutes, Miriam Taves talks about being actually something that's like not really that needed. And I don't mean to like discredit August's contribution to the movie, but Ona asked him to take the minutes essentially to basically save his life. She knows that he is depressed. She knows that he has a gun. She knows that like he's unhappy. They dive in a lot more in the book about like his parents and how he ended up coming back to the colony after his parents had been excommunicated. But essentially this moment where she's like, why do you have a gun? It's like essentially what the reveal is that like Ona got him to take the minutes to essentially like sort of loop him in, make it, you know, have this moment. And then at the end of the movie, they give him purpose by saying like, you'll stay behind and teach all the boys. So it's really, really powerful. I think this moment of like just how depressed August has been and that he like is given a purpose in this community. And it's really sweet.
The elders called them evil.
That's not true.
It's the elders' quest for power that is responsible.
Because they needed to have those...
Those they'd have power over.
And those people are us.
And they have taught the lesson of power to the boys and men of the colony, and the boys and men have been excellent students.
Don't we all want some sort of power?
I think so. But I'm not sure.
But we caught them. We caught them!
Yes, you did.
Then why are you making it so complicated?
This is very, very boring.
We could ask the men to leave.
Ask the men to leave? None of us have ever asked the men for anything. Not a single thing. Not even for the salt to be passed. Not even for a penny or a moment alone. Or to take the washing in. Or to open a curtain, or to go easy on the small yearlings, or to put your hand on the small of my back while I try again for the 12th or 13th time to push a baby out of my body. Isn't it interesting that the one and only request we women would have of the men would be for them to leave?
Asking the men to leave is not an option. Oh.
I'd like you to imagine Ruth and Cheryl.
No, not again.
Please stop.
You look, August is still taking the minutes.
Oh. You look, August is still taking the minutes.
Sometimes I think people laugh as hard as they'd like to cry.
August, you must think we're all lunatics.
Okay. I am going to, as per usual, I am not taking a segment. I'm taking a very funny, one of my favorite moments from the movie. And it is a funny moment. And it is when the women are talking, and specifically Greta is pointing out, like, you know, they're talking about what they could do if they stayed. And Greta talks about how, like, they never asked for anything. So how hilarious would it be if the first thing we ever asked them to do is for them to leave? Because the idea gets thrown around that, like, well, what if, why don't we stay? And the men are forced to leave. And they all kind of, like, find this ridiculous that they would ask the men to leave. And then I believe Jesse Buckley's character makes a joke about, well, we could just kill all the men. And there's this awkward silence, and then it breaks out in laughter. They all start laughing. It's like a fever dream of, like, oh my, it's so funny to, like, imagine, like, what if we killed them all? And then Jesse Buckley turns over and looks to August, and he's still writing notes. And she like can't believe that he's writing the notes of, like, about killing the men, but that's so funny to her. It's not like she's mad. It's hilarious that he is writing, like, seriously in the notes. Then they suggested that they kill all the men. And I just love it. Again, this thing of, like, you know, the moments where they sing together, where they actually do, like, care for each other, like, that, like, they could build the society together. This is what they need to do to be able to move forward. They all do, like, all want to be safe is, like, that is the fear that they have. Like, even Jesse Buckley's character, who is, like, worried about leaving, like, really, it's like, yeah, she's in this awful relationship, but, like, in a way, like, her kids get fed, like, you know, these things, like, she could take care of her kids, which is, like, feels like she might not be able to do if they have to leave. And as awful it is that she, like, gets abused by Klaus and her kids get abused by Klaus, like, she doesn't know any different and is so fearful of what would be out there. And these moments where they, like, just come together, even if it's just to laugh about the silly joke, for me is, like, the heart of this film, where I feel like there's, like, hope in this incredibly sad film.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, and I think that like you always say, Grace, the movie kind of needs it. It's a very serious movie in general, but it's no less, it doesn't feel just like shoehorned in for the sake of a joke or a lighthearted moment to kind of cleanse the palate for the audience. It's very much like of a human response to a horrible situation. You know, you find sometimes, and I think it's even mentioned in the movie, you know, like, sometimes you laugh so that you don't cry. Yeah. And it's, you know, the emotion kind of seems to come from the same place sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, we'll move on to the segment, If It Won. So LaTanya, if at the end of the Academy Awards on Sunday, March 12th, the last award goes to Women Talking for Best Picture, how are you feeling?
Very, very excited, shocked, probably a little tipsy.
Well, that's separate. Any movie could win, and yeah, you know, well, having some drinks. Yeah.
That's true. Just like flooding the Discord with clapping hands, probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if this movie won Best Picture, given that it, you know, is this little indie movie by Sarah Polley that just happens to have the most amazing cast assembled this year, other than The Woman King, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I really don't know what I would do. I think that my joy would be overwhelming, because it would finally mean that someone was listening when women were talking.
Mm-hmm. Men talk, or men listening. That would be great. Yeah. Ariel, how would you feel if Women Talking won?
Men listening is over.
Yeah, that's right. No, that needs to continue.
When the movie comes out, that'll be the opening of the podcast. And we'll be like, oh no. Yeah. I would be delighted. I might even cry depending on how the rest of my day had gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Sunday, so probably not too much of a train wreck. But it's, you know, it would be one of those wonderful surprises, unlike, you know, some of the less desirable surprises about, at least in the category. And it would feel like a vindication of all the efforts and certainly of all the performances in it, since, as we said, none of them were nominated individually, but it might feel like an award for all of them collectively.
Yeah, I mean, I would be delighted. I would be absolutely thrilled. I would be incredibly surprised, if only because I think it's sort of like polling last, I think. Like, if I had to, like, if I was putting the betting odds, looking at the betting odds, like, I feel like it has to be like lower than Elvis, even, which, like, I know is like, doesn't make sense, but I do think
that's
like
part of the problem. This is why we fear the Elvis win, is because we can kind of rationalize.
I know.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, it hasn't really won much else. I think, like, the fact that, like, you know, I think that if it got like a Rooney Mara nomination or like a Claire Foy nomination, even Jesse Buckley nomination, like, that helps its polling. But just the fact that it like is not really nominated for anything else, it really has had no momentum, I think, going in. I think this is one of those things where Women King, I think, really messed up in terms of when it got released on Netflix, LT, in terms of like, you want to hit that window, I think, of like being in people's minds when it gets nominated. Yeah. Like, I think there's world where, like, even though it was a box office success, like, if, you know, the fact that it would be on Netflix and you'd see it, you like, it keeps in your mind a little bit more. So I think Women Talking hit the window better. Even they delayed this movie a fair bit.
Yeah.
Whereas like Women, but now I feel like, okay, it did its part in terms of like getting nominated. I don't think it's had any momentum to like drive a best picture win.
To say that the studio boned the rollout of
The Woman King
is really speaking too lightly about how much they messed up this movie's rollout.
Yeah. But if this somehow won, if this was like the surprise of of the year,
it would be the shock of the year.
We'd get Frances McDormand on stage.
This would be the knee slap.
Yeah.
It would be it would be like a warm slap in the face of like, yes, something cool.
Oh my God. But please don't let Chris Rock talk about it for another 2 years afterwards.
Did you hear, LT, that they have, I think I told you this, Ariel, they have a whole PR team on standby waiting to
They have like a special response team just in case Will Smith slaps someone
as if they don't want the slap to happen again, you know, they would be delighted and
we were really
going
trying
viral
to prevent it this time, sorry. Very like Cher from Clueless,
sorry. I got some footage I saw of the emergency response crew, and it was like, okay, so when you slap someone, you want to make sure you really get a good wind up, you know? It was like training people how to slap other people. Yeah.
So nefarious.
Yeah. Well, that is our coverage of Women Talking. LT, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to be here to celebrate this movie. It's a fantastic movie. Everyone should see it. It should be required viewing for everyone.
Mm-hmm. I agree. What are you up to? Where else can people find you, LT?
You can find me in lots of places. I am working on you. Yes,
what?
You.
Me? What?
Yes.
Who?
You.
I'm on first.
Yes. Everyone's on first. The Netflix show that will have part two of season four premiering in 3 days as we record this on March 9th. So Marissa Garza and I are covering that. I am covering the final season of Snowfall with the We Got Y'all crew. We are your connect to the Snowfall season 6. Me, Mari, and Chappelle are having a great time covering that show. You can join me and Josh on the Versus podcast, where we are taking The Last of Us and Station 11, two shows that we adore, and we are making them fight every week. And I am also involved in the coverage of The Mandalorian, because the Pedro Pascal cinematic universe is something that I must always be a part of. So I'm doing the feedback show with DM Philly and Fitzy. And lots of other things to come. But you can follow me on Twitter at LK Starks, and you can follow me on Instagram at Stormborn1222.
Amazing. I am on Twitter at Hi From Grace Ariel. Where can people find you?
I am on Twitter at That Other Ariel.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow with another Best Picture nom on the Daily Oscar. Until then, I'm Grace. That's Ariel. And this is Push Recap. Stay back.